All right, welcome to the Free Stretch Week 2 edition in the NFL. I am Bobby Fenton. Thank you for joining us here on, as I record, this Thursday afternoon. And we've got the Bucs and the Falcons coming up on Sunday. We've already done a show since the last Bucs game, since they played last Thursday. So kind of just a recap and gather and get ready for Atlanta type of show today. I have a few other things I want to talk about as well. But the Bucs will be back home. 4 o'clock kickoff. Always like the 4 o'clock kickoffs. And they'll take on an 0-1 Falcons team who looked atrocious in losing to the Eagles 32-6 this past Sunday. So thanks again for taking the time. And thanks to our good friends at Joe Bucs Fan for giving me this chance to be on the single best place anywhere on the internet or TV, radio, wherever, for Bucs coverage, joebucsfan.com. Thanks to our good friends at Bill Curry Ford. Like I always tell you guys, you can get a car over there, a van over there, a truck over there, brand new, pre-owned, used. You've got the nationwide, unlimited, lifetime powertrain warranty. If there's any issues with the engine or anything like that, you can bring it in. And they're just taking care of people right and left. I was over there last week for the fantasy draft that I did for Joe Bucs Fan. And just go ahead and go to the website first, BillCurryFord.com. Remember, it's spelled C-U-R-R-I-E, BillCurryFord.com. You can check out all the inventory there. You want to go see them in person, go to the showroom, go to the huge lot. It's all there, a mile north of Raymond James Stadium on Dale Mabry. But if you go to the website, BillCurryFord.com, you can shop that way too. And in fact, they will bring cars to you at your house, office, anywhere you want, just to test drive. And if you make the purchase, they'll deliver that to you too as well. And now they're even doing service at home. Like, they will come and do your oil change and stuff to your house. So you don't even have to go there for anything if you don't want to. Although I recommend it. So check them out, BillCurryFord.com. And thanks to them, as always. So Bucs got their win over the Cowboys. We talked about that last episode. Then week one in the NFL happened, the rest of week one. And it was pretty eventful, and it just felt good. You know, it always feels good that first Sunday of the regular season, even though it opens up with the Thursday night primetime game. But when that first Sunday at 1 o'clock, like Sundays at 1 o'clock are always special. And the first one comes, and it's 1 o'clock, and like 9 games all kick off at one time. And maybe some of you have Red Zone at home. I don't. But I've always got whatever games are on, either Fox or CBS. I've always got the laptop fired up. Everybody's got their traditions for game days. And again, whether the Bucs are playing or not, it's still an NFL game day, and there's only now 17 of them where everybody's playing, not just the, you know, besides the primetime games. And if you're into fantasy, you've probably got all that going. I know a lot of people are. If you're into just straight up making picks like I am, I do a pool with my friends that I've been doing for like, man, 15 years now, where we pick every single game against the spread every week. And we have like a weekly pot that we all put in a few bucks for, and the winner gets that. But then we also keep the total season standings too. And there's an even bigger pot with more money for that one. And man, it's fun. Like, I mean, I've just got all the games going, and I don't have Red Zone. Some people have Red Zone. I've thought about doing it, but I've never, you know, because a lot of the times I'm focused on the Bucs game anyway. And I may or may not, you know, pull in a stream or two off the books on my laptop if I feel like I really need to monitor a game. But just following the scores and everything, it just feels great. I just love having the games all going on all at once. So it was, you know, nice in a good way that the Bucs weren't one of those games on Sunday, because they're the defending champs and they got to play Thursday night. But Sundays at 1 are back, just like Saturdays at noon when all those college football games get going, same type of thing. And I mean, I couldn't be happier. I love this time of year so much, for so many different reasons, but a very big and probably the biggest reason for that is just the football coming at you in waves every day of the week except for two, basically, and that's Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Tuesdays and Wednesdays are like the toughest days, right? And I know later in the season they'll throw like some action at you on ESPN or a little bit of that, but that's not quite the same. But, you know, like tonight, Thursday. Right now it's Thursday. It's right at noon. It's 11:58 as I record this. And this is a typical weekday, I would say. You know, it's not the weekend yet. There's still, you know, it's a regular day. And yet, I'm in a better mood right now. Why? Because, first of all, we're getting close to the weekend. And I don't even have a regular job, by the way. Like, my job, I work weekends a lot of times, too, and I do all kinds. So, but yeah, I'm still in those rhythms. Like, that's the way I love about the calendar, and I love about the football, the way the football schedule works. Because it's got that weekly you know, set up to it. And so, like, I'm a guy who is just as liable to be working a Saturday or a Sunday as I am a Monday or a Tuesday, and I don't work during the day anyway. And yet, I still feel those rhythms just like your regular Monday to Friday 9-to-5-er. And on Thursday right now at noon, I'm in a better mood. And why? We had some football tonight, okay? And I don't care that it's Giants, who is it? Giants Redskins, right? Giants Redskins. Hey, let's go. And there's a college game too. That I'm in a better mood. Like, I'm in a better mood because of it. Friday nights are for high school. I do the PA for Chamberlain High School for their home games. My good friend Jason Lane, the head coach over there, and they're not at home this week. I think they're off this week, so I don't have a game. But still, I might go down the street. You know, I live not far from Plant High School, or go see my alma mater, Jesuit, or just football. Friday, okay. Then Saturday and Sunday, we all know about that. Monday, you've always got Monday night football. Tuesday and Wednesday are the doldrums. Got to be honest, not a big fan of Tuesdays and Wednesdays. They're boring. And maybe my life's boring because it revolves around too much football, but like I said, no complaints from late August through the new year in the Fenton household. So we do get into the Sunday rhythm now with the Bucks, their first Sunday game of the year. It's at 4:05 against Atlanta. Looking ahead to what we have for that one, first of all, the biggest piece of news, I guess, from practice this week is Jordan Whitehead is full go. He was out there yesterday on the practice field. He's out there again today. That's a big boost in general, even more so with Sean Murphy bunting out, and the Bucks still don't know. He's going to be out for at least the next month, and he's on injured reserve, but he's eligible to come off that, and he could come off that and play again, or he could be out the entire season or somewhere in between. They just don't know yet. But I know they don't play different positions, but still, it's just bolstering the secondary depth to have a guy like Whitehead back. And as far as how they will address SMB being out, you know, they've handled it a couple different ways. When it happened this past Thursday against Dallas, Russ Cockrell came in and filled in. But Murphy Bunting also left the game last year against Denver over in Denver. And when that happened, they moved Winfield up from safety, and then they replaced Winfield with Mike Edwards. So, you know, and as Greg Allman pointed that out on his Twitter feed, the Bucks beat writer for The Athletic. So there's a couple different ways they can handle it, but either way, having Whitehead back there as well, it's just, you know, it helps. So hopefully we get a little bit better showing from the secondary this week against Matt Ryan and the Falcons. Again, they did not look good against the Eagles, losing 32-6. And in that game, Ryan didn't even crack 200 yards. I think he had like 164 yards or something like that. No turnovers or anything, but just they couldn't get going. And so the Bucks come into the ball game, and I haven't even looked at the point spreads yet. I always like to play guess that line on my old radio show, but if I had to guess the line for Bucks Atlanta, and I haven't checked it, so I'm not cheating here, I would guess the Bucks would have to be over a touchdown favorite, but I wouldn't think it'd be much more than that, so maybe like 7 or 8. So let me just check that real quick and see how close I was. I'll find it in a little while, but anyway, it's a game, you know, as a Bucks fan, you approach this game thinking, okay, here's a down Atlanta team. Here's a Bucks team who, even though they won on Thursday, you know, could have looked better in certain aspects of the game, is getting a little bit of help on the injury front with Jordan Whitehead back. So we'll see. Other injuries to report, there aren't any for Atlanta. The Bucks were pretty clean, too, besides Whitehead, who's back now. Zach Schreiner, the long snapper, did tear a ligament in his finger on Thursday against Dallas. To his credit, he snapped the rest of the game, and I think he had 4 or 5 different snaps, including the game-winning field goal. With that, it was on his left hand, so not the hand he fires with, but on his guide hand. But either way, hats off to him for sucking it up, although now he does need surgery, so he is out for a while, and Carson Tinker is the new long snapper for the Bucks. No other changes, no other injuries to report, and everything looking pretty good over there. As far as looking at the personnel on the offensive side, there were a couple things. You know, we know what happened in the game with Ronald Jones and Leonard Fournette. Jones with a crucial fumble that cost him playing time the rest of the game. Fournette had a ball on a screen pass bounce off his hands that led to an interception, but continued playing. It looks like, and I told you this last week, I don't think there will be much change in how they use the guys. You know, doghousing a guy for the rest of a certain game is different than doghousing him going forward. And so Arians said, here's his quote on Ronald Jones. He said, he's starting this week again. Now, that's a little misleading because Arians, I think he meant he's in the same role again. Fournette technically started this past Thursday, so I don't know the word again. Maybe he just, you know, means that both those guys will appear in their same roles. But I wouldn't expect anything different as far as that goes. And, you know, hopefully it doesn't matter that much. Like I said, it shouldn't matter that much. And they can both bounce back. And Fournette did some good things aside from the interception. But Ronald Jones hopefully can bounce back on Sunday. Now, looking at, there was some concerns. You know, just reading Twitter, hearing people. And honestly, I don't even know who raised the concerns. Sometimes you hear about concerns from people saying that there's concerns, but you don't actually hear about the concerns themselves. So I've seen a lot of people in the media talking about, well, hey, you know, Mike Evans, you know, people are concerned. But I haven't actually talked to anybody who's concerned, so maybe there aren't concerns. But it was raised by some media members, hey, is there any issue with Mike Evans? You know, didn't hear from him much, didn't have much of a game. And I told you this on Friday, too, when I did the post-game show on Joe Bucks Fan, the post-game podcast. I said, look, the Bucks are deep at receiver. There's a lot of mouths to feed. If their overall offensive output struggles, we should be concerned. But if one guy, even it being, you know, one of their main guys like Mike Evans, doesn't have his biggest day, but yet Antonio Brown, he chowed a little bit on Thursday, right? And Godwin too, but mainly Brown. But when you have the type of receiving core the Bucks have, it's like a baseball offense, you know. This guy was 3 for 4, this guy was 2 for 3, everybody had a great day. Oh, this one guy was 0 for 4. Okay, fine, but tomorrow the 0 for 4 guy will go 3 for 4. Maybe the guy that went 3 for 4 will go 0 for 3. But if you have a good offense, there's always somebody. And so it goes with the Bucks receiving core. I mean, Mike Evans, okay, yeah. I mean, if Mike Evans was the only guy we got and we couldn't get him going, that might be a problem. But Antonio Brown had a big day. Godwin had a big day and almost had a bigger day, if not for a couple of close calls and a drop and all that. So, are you concerned? No, of course. I would expect there's going to be Sundays where Evans has big days and we don't hear as much from Brown or Godwin. I mean, there's just so many of them, and it's a great problem to have. From a team standpoint, it's not a concern at all. And Leftwich was asked about it, Byron Leftwich, the Bucks offensive coordinator, and he was very, you know, thoughtful about it. He said, well, first of all, you know, Mike doesn't see singles, is what his quote was. He means doesn't see single coverage. So they're working on Mike a lot. And, you know, hey, if that's the case, again, that's the whole point. I mean, if they're doubling Mike Evans and now Antonio Brown's running wild or Chris Godwin's running wild or Scotty Miller or whoever the hell else, fine. And for personally for Mike Evans, I know he wants his numbers and I don't blame him. But Mike Evans didn't say a word, by the way. He's fine. And again, some weeks it'll be his week, and we won't hear as much. But there's with a receiving core this deep, and I said this on a show a year ago when we got Antonio Brown, I wondered out loud. I said, you know, I wonder how Mike Evans and Chris Godwin feel, and they're not going to say anything, and they never have. But I wonder how they feel that we go out and get another receiver as if we didn't already have two studs. And I wonder if they're thinking, do we really need to do this? What does this say about their plans for me? But to their credit, they've never complained, and there's been plenty of footballs to go around, and they won the Super Bowl. So having one off day for Evans isn't that big of a deal, I don't think. I think a lot of this, I'll tell you what I think it is. I know I just said I did a fantasy draft. I was filling in for Joe Bucks Fan because neither of the Joes were able to represent. But I'm not like a big fantasy guy myself. I think this is all fantasy football. I think people that have Mike Evans on their fantasy team are the only ones that are worried about it. Maybe Mike Evans himself. But that's not, you know, as a Bucks fan or a member of the Bucks coaching staff, that's not a concern at all. You care about the team. And Mike Evans does too, okay? And he knows, I think. I'm not going to speak for him, but I mean, I if he said something, that'd be different. But all these other people, well, Mike Evans didn't get enough touches or what happened? How come he didn't get heard from? Well, the Bucks offense did fine. Their passing offense did fine. So nobody cares, or nobody should care. And again, from Mike Evans' personal standpoint for his career, I know he wants as many balls as possible. Every receiver does. But with this offense, man, there's going to be days where Evans, you know, goes 8 for 165 and you don't hear much from Brown or it's Godwin or somebody else, and that is just fine. That is the whole point of why they've assembled this roster the way they have and why they brought these guys back from last season and kept the same 22 starters. And they're going to be just fine. And they were just fine on Thursday. So that was just something that was coming up out there that some people talked about, but I didn't think it was too big of a concern. And we'll see what happens on Sunday against Atlanta. Now, as far as Atlanta, if you want to go with the DVOA rankings, which we always go over on the show, and DVOA is kind of one of those all-encompassing stats. This is why I like to get into it. I know some people aren't as into the analytics as others, but this is based on just one game. But Atlanta, 30th in overall DVOA, 30th offensively, 27th defensively. After the first game, the Bucks, 13th overall was where their effort rated, although it was 10th offensively, 24th defensively. And as the games pile up, that data will become more and more, telling. You know, one game you can get swings here and there, but the more games they play, the more telling that'll get. Bucks were top 10 in DVOA almost all of last year. And as long as they keep playing how they're capable of playing, that should continue this year. So, should be a good time for those that maybe didn't get a chance to go on Thursday night. Maybe this is their first Bucks home game of the year. You get the tailgating scene, should be great. I haven't checked the weather yet for Sunday. We're still 3 days out, but that's always a concern a little bit with the 4 o'clock kickoffs in the early part of the season because we've had some lightning delays and things like that. Although I think it's supposed to be cooler. Like the past couple days, the dew point feels like it's been a little low. You know, following Dennis Phillips and Paul Delgado on Twitter, that's what I've gathered. So I'll check them out for Sunday. I should have done that before I started recording the show. But if you want to email me, you can always do that. I love hearing from everybody. BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com is the email address. It's BobbyGameDay @yahoo.com. On Twitter, it's the same thing. You can get me at BobbyGameDay. Oh, one other thing I forgot to mention. Congratulations to Bradley Pinion, winning NFL Special Teams Player of the Week for his efforts. Pinning, what was it, 4 punts down inside, like the 15-yard line, having that 165-yarder go out at the 2, and just having an all-around awesome night he did on Thursday. He gets that honor. I know he has said he's rooting or gunning for All-Pro as the Bucks punter, and that would be fantastic if he can do it. And he's well on his way after Week 1 right now, so congrats to him for getting that award. One thing I wanted to talk about league-wide, and we've talked about this many times before, here and there, but, you know, it's good to see it actually on paper, like, bearing itself out and, like, making sense. What is happening with coaching decisions in the NFL and how analytics, you know, a lot of coaches are old school guys. And I get that stuff away from me. I don't want to hear it. You know, I know what I see and I go with my gut and all that stuff. But a lot of the conventional ways of doing things have been changing. And some of them have been changing rapidly, some have been changing slowly, but I consider it progress. So here was a trend from week one this year in the NFL, and this is an article on Yahoo Sports by Henry Bushnell, but he talks about just a specific example, and this is in the Bengals game against the Vikings they were playing against. So Bengals-Vikings, this happened on Sunday. Bengals ended up winning the game in overtime, but there was a situation earlier in the game. It was 4th and 1. The Bengals had the ball on their own 30, and they had a 2-touchdown lead. And their coach, Zach Taylor, who's one of the younger guys, 38 years old, and probably a little more analytically minded than some of the old school guys, had a decision there on 4th and 1 from their own 30, up 21-7. This is late in the third quarter. Now, that is if you didn't ever read anything and you just watched football, like all of us used to do before all this information was out there, and there was no numbers and no math and no probabilities. 4th and 1, your own 30, you're already up 2 touchdowns anyway. Now you're punting the ball, you're playing it safe, man. 2-touchdown lead, why take a chance? And yet, if you read some of these things, or if you've listened to my show where I try to convey these things to you if you haven't read them yourself, you know that going for it on 4th and 1 is almost always recommended, and situations still matter, but when we're talking about 1 yard, and again, that can vary, it can be a half yard, or it can be inches, but anything a yard or less, you have a very high probability of making, number one, and number two, we have learned that field position, in our minds over the years, has been slightly, if not greatly, overrated, while possession of the actual football has been underrated. Like, having the ball is the most important thing. That's how you move the ball, and that's how you score. And so he went for it on 4th and 1 from the 30. And that in and of itself isn't as much of a big deal. The big deal is that it wasn't a big deal. Like, nobody freaked out. Like, oh my God, what? You remember when Bill Belichick went for that fourth down against the Colts in that Sunday night game, you know, whatever it was, 10 years ago now? Everybody made such a big deal. They couldn't believe he went for it. Even though, again, that was the right thing to do. And they actually completed the pass on that play, but they still were short. It was like fourth and two, I think, if I remember. Point is, like, that was a huge story for, like, days and days. And part of the reason is because it was the highest profile game of the week between two of the league's best teams. But the other reason was, like, people didn't do that stuff back then. And now, no big deal at all. So the Bengals went for that fourth and one on their own 30. They didn't get it, by the way. They still ended up winning the game. But the point the article is making here, and they show you some numbers here. He says, Taylor coaches in the 2021 NFL. Let me go back here a second. He says, Zach Taylor faced a decision that 10 years ago would have been a no-brainer. Any rational coach would have punted. No sensible fan or pundit would have even questioned him. But Taylor coaches in the 2021 NFL, a league that is slowly but surely being remodeled by nerds, so he didn't punt. He went for it. And the decision, on top of being gutsy and ballsy, as his own player said, was mathematically sound. And again, there's all these things. And some people don't even want to hear them, but if you listen to my show, you're going to hear them. All right? Every play, there's win probability. So you plug in the score of the game, who has the ball, where on the field, down and distance, all that stuff, how much time's left, everything. And given all those parameters, and every football play has them, every single down, there's a probability of winning for Team A and Team B. So, again, up 21-7, late third quarter, fourth and one, your own 30-yard line. You might have an 80% chance of victory at that point, and the other team might have a 20 or whatever it is. You know, just basic win probability out of a total of 100%. What are your odds and what are their odds? And every play and the result of every play changes those odds. Now, there's accounts you can follow on Twitter. EDJ Sports is one. There's a couple of you look around. But point is, they will tell you, hey, you know, and I follow this account on Sundays during all these games, and it'll be like, hey, Bruce Arians just punted on fourth and two from the other team's 45. That's a minus 4% chance of a win probability added. He should have gone for it. Or they'll say, you know, Zach Taylor just went for it on fourth and one from his own 30 up 21-7. That decision added 3 percentage points of win probability. It'll tell you all that. And you might think, oh, well, come on, you can't quantify that stuff. Anybody who tries to act like it's such an exact science is crazy. And you're right, it's not an exact science, okay? But basic point of this whole thing, you increased your odds of winning or not winning by making these decisions and going for it, in this case, increased the Bengals' odds of winning. And it wasn't just that one game. On all of week one here, okay, NFL teams went for fourth down conversions 51 times this past weekend. That is the highest single week total in the history of the NFL, okay? There have never been as many fourth down attempts in one week in the NFL, with 16 games in this case, as there have been any other time. And that was actually, I think, week one last year, just for comparison's sake. There were 37 fourth down attempts in 2019. Week one, there were 26. In 2018, there were 22. So more fourth down attempts every single year. It's been steadily going up. And if you go back like 10 years, like there'd be like 8 fourth down attempts in all of, you know, a certain week. I mean, it was sometimes a single-digit number. It was very rarely done. And then if you account for situations, like obviously if you take out the final 2 minutes of a game, like or a situation where a team's down by 5 points or 6 points and they have fourth and four, they're going for that. Obviously not kicking a field goal because they need more than a field goal. I'm just talking about the ones where there's a decision to be made. A lot more teams now apparently have gotten the point, whether they're old school coaches want to admit it out loud or not, and they're making these decisions. And it's very refreshing to see all that going on. And so I was looking at some things, some numbers that came out of week one, and that one caught my eye more than any other. Now, in my book, this is progress, but there is still work to be done, as there always is when progress is being made. If you look at the cumulative cost of the bad decisions, like coaches still aren't making the right fourth down decisions a lot of the time, but last season in week one, and EDJ Sports, the place I mentioned, the Twitter account I mentioned, researched this, they found that last season in week one, suboptimal decision making cost teams a cumulative 170 percentage points of win probability. This past weekend, that was down to 104, which is almost equal to the win probability gained from all the good decisions that coaches made. So we're almost at the breaking point where we're getting actually positive win probability added by all these decisions. And obviously, you know, I don't know how many teams. This is a good question, actually. I should try and find this out. You know, you see on Twitter, like I mentioned, there's companies or just individual people who are tracking these things, and they tell you, oh, yep, that decision cost them 10% win probability. That one cost them 5%. That one gained them 10% win probability. But how fast can they know that? Because if I was a head coach in the NFL, this would be my thing. Like, if I was a head coach in the NFL, I would want to have somebody standing next to me or on my headset, one or the other, where in real time, like, hey, we got 4th and 2 from midfield. We're up 10. There's 8 minutes to go third quarter. Hey, do I go for this? Do I? What do I do? I add 3% win probability if I go, or do I lose win probability? And then tell me right then and there. Because I know there are teams that study this. I know that there are teams with analytics departments and that didn't have them 5-10 years ago, and now they do. But is that stuff after the fact? They can go back and see where they need to improve, or can they? I mean, if I was coaching, I would want somebody right there saying, hey, coach, okay, you need to go for this. It adds 7% win probability. Hey, coach, you should kick here. Otherwise, you're taking away win probability. And I would wonder, you know, if there's a running, like, little just computer that you keep the situation in. Again, the score, the down, the distance, field position, and time remaining. Those are the big ones. And then it just spits out what needs to happen on every play as far as decision making. I don't know how many teams have that or how many teams are open to that, but I would certainly want that if I was a head coach. Either way, it appears that it is working, because there were several examples, if you just want to get anecdotal about it. The Broncos, I mean, Vic Fangio, he's like one of those old school conservative guys. They went for a 4th and 7 in the first quarter when they were kind of in between yardages and didn't want to punt, but it was too far for a field goal. They got it. Ended up kicking a field goal in the Chiefs-Browns game. The Browns passed up field goals on each of their first two drives. They converted a 4th and 3 and a 4th and 1. They turned 6 points into 15. Why 15 instead of 14? They went for 2 after one of the touchdowns. That's a whole other analytical thing, but they did that too. And they ended up losing to the Chiefs, but they got out to a big early lead and ended up blowing it later. And there was a few other teams that just made good decisions, aggressive decisions that ended up bearing fruit for them. And if you look at just another thing, like, for example, in the Eagles-Falcons game that we were talking about, where the Eagles had a 32-6 blowout, why was it 32-6 instead of 31-6? The Eagles had 4 touchdowns and a field goal. That's because when the Eagles led 7-6 and they scored to go up 13-6, they said, hey, we're already up 7. It's worth trying to go for 2 to make it a 2-score game than just kicking the extra point. So let's do that. And if we miss, we're still up 7. They're not going to go for 2. They're just going to tie the game either way. So they went for it and got it and took a 15-6 lead into halftime instead of a 14-6 lead into halftime. It didn't end up mattering because they just ran away with it in the second half. But little things like that you never would have seen before. The Browns took an 8-0 lead instead of a 7-0 lead in Kansas City when they got aggressive. And 2-point conversion decisions are different than 4th-down decisions. But the calculus is the same. It depends on the score. It depends on the time remaining. Obviously, the field position is always the same with 2-point conversion plays. But all these things, it's kind of cool to see, like, people discovering the light. And little by little, and I said, if Vic Fangio can punt or can go for it on 4th and 7, then there's hope for everybody all around football. So just something good, I thought, to see. And I'll be keeping an eye on that. And I certainly will be keeping an eye on it with the Bucs all season long. I didn't have a huge problem with what the Bucs did on Thursday with any of their decision-making. There was a couple minor things, but if you listen to me, you know I always go over those things first and foremost as far as, hey, we kicked a field goal on 4th and 2. We should have gone for that, or why did we use a timeout here? Because even really good coaches can mess those things up, and they're hard. I mean, football's got a lot going on, and this is why I go back to having a guy. You know, when you're coaching football, especially if you're calling plays, and Bruce Arians isn't calling plays now, but when you're trying to keep all that stuff straight, you need somebody else to stand there and tell you, all right, hey, coach, you need to use a timeout here. You got 2 left. This is the spot to use one. Or, hey, coach, right now, instead of running the hurry up, you need to go ahead and huddle. or hey, here, a spike's a better idea than a timeout. No, a timeout's a better idea than a spike. All those quick decisions when you're already doing other things are hard. I mean, you see these things get messed up every week in football, and we all wonder, how can they screw up something so obvious? But if you've been down on a football sideline, even if you've just been in high school, you know, like Bobby Bowden used to say, there ain't a library down there. There's a lot going on. It's easy to mess those things up, but you need someone whose job it is just to worry about that stuff and can help you. I used to do that for my uncle. He was a head coach at Jefferson, and I helped him out for a couple seasons. And, you know, I was just there. I coached the JV receivers, and we coached in JV. But then on Friday nights, that's what I do. I just stand next to him because he's doing all kinds of stuff, and he was calling the plays. And I'd be like, all right, hey, you got third and six from the left hash here. Like, I just, you know, a play would happen. Or let's say, like, we got a big interception, and it gets returned all the way down to the 8-yard line. Everybody's running up and down and yelling and screaming. The band's striking up there playing the fight song. I'd be the guy in his ear, all right, you got first and goal. You're going to be on the right hash. And that would just help him get the play called, get to our quarterback, and everybody stay calm, you know, and actually go convert it into a touchdown, like that type of stuff. So you need someone like that because I could see how it can get messed up if you're worrying about other things. But if you're having a person who's dedicated to that, or you have a team of people dedicated to that, and you've got somebody on the headset that can get that information to you quickly, I mean, every NFL team should be doing that. So I would be interested. I'm going to try and do more research into that and find out how NFL teams approach that and how much of that is going on. And I'll try and give that to you in future shows. But as for now, you may be listening to this after the Thursday night game already happened. I'm recording this on Thursday, but by the time it gets posted on Joe Bucks Fan, it may be afterward. But I will tell you this, speaking of numbers, and we'll check me after the fact. I like the Giants tonight in Washington on Thursday night football, and I'll tell you why. These are some numbers, and these are courtesy of Dr. Bob Sports. If you Google Dr. Bob NFL, he breaks down some of the games every week. And, you don't want to get too caught up in the gambling thing, but I like concrete numbers. I don't need to hear opinions. I need to hear numbers. So here's some numbers, okay? In week two, going over past seasons in the NFL, and he doesn't say how many seasons this takes into account, road teams that scored 14 points or less in their week one game and allowed 21 points or more, like the Giants did in losing to Denver last week, those teams are 34-10-2 against the spread as underdogs going up against a host home team that also lost their opener, which describes the Redskins. So that's just one angle tonight. There's another one that also leans toward the Giants. And so as bad as the Giants looked against the Broncos, and also Washington's without Fitzpatrick, I know people that saw the Redskins in the playoffs with Taylor Heineke against the Bucs. Hey, that's not much of a drop-off. But analytically, it actually is somewhat of a drop-off. And even though he looked pretty good against the Bucs last January, another reason where I tend to lean Giants plus +3 tonight. Again, by the time you listen to this, it may have already happened. Maybe I'm right. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Dr. Bob's right or wrong. That's a stat. So that number is not right or wrong. That is actually a thing. Doesn't mean it'll happen tonight. But that'd be what I'd be playing if I was doing that tonight. As far as the Bucs and Falcons on Sunday, 4:05 kickoff, Raymond James Stadium. Enjoy it. Have fun. We will be back next week. And now that the Bucs have played their Thursday night opener, we're going to get into a little bit of a rhythm here with the Sunday games for a while. There'll be some primetime and whatnot, but nothing on Mondays or Thursdays for a little bit. In a few weeks, they play the Eagles on a Thursday night. But until next week, enjoy the Bucs and the Falcons on Sunday. Remember, all the coverage is right here on JoeBucksFan.com. Thanks to them for giving me this platform. You don't need to be anywhere else. Thanks to our good friends at Bill Curry Ford. Thanks to all of you for listening. Have a great weekend. Happy birthday to my son, Wade. He's 10 years old today. I'm so proud of him, and I'm so glad to be his dad. And everybody, have fun this weekend. Be safe. And wherever you are, good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucs.